This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Across the nation, governors are facing grassroots pressure to lift their stay-at-home orders. This week, demonstrators targeted capitals in Michigan, Kentucky, Ohio, and New York, among other states. On Tuesday, more than 100 protesters in Raleigh demanded the state reopen for business. Wearing masks and gloves, state capitol and Raleigh police watched over the demonstration and eventually arrested one protester. Later that day, a tweet by the Raleigh Police Department put it simply, protesting is a non-essential activity. WRAL State House reporter Travis Fain joins us now. Travis, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Tell us what happened at that protest in Raleigh.
Yeah, there's a group that has popped up called Reopen NC. It's a very fast-growing Facebook group. It's always hard to know how real things that are online are, but they got quite a few people out for this protest. And initially it was billed as stay in your cars and honk your horns at the General Assembly building, which is not far from the governor's mansion in downtown Raleigh, but it very quickly became more than that. I was not there, but I mean, clearly looking at things online after the fact, there were a lot of people there. They were not all social distancing. Capitol Police, assisted by Raleigh Police, broke it up. One woman was arrested by Capitol Police. They say that she violated the mass gathering part of these stay-at-home orders, which say basically no more than 10 people in a gathering, and you gotta social distance. It was kind of what happened after that with the tweet that I found most interesting.
Well, tell us more about that, because talk about the tweet, because there was a sort of a response to that arrest, and then Raleigh Police tweeted an answer. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, so the First Amendment, it seems very rigid, but it's actually a little bit nuanced in application. Government, scholars agree, can regulate the manner of speech, particularly if there's another avenue to say something. So these social distancing measures on mass gatherings, I'm sure people will disagree in some quarters, but they seem to be allowed. Government seems to be able to do that. But Raleigh Police, which again didn't make this arrest, but had like a running Twitter account of it, they just straight up said that protesting is non-essential, suggesting that even if we're social distancing, you could be arrested just for protesting because it's not specifically laid out in either the governor's order or a Wake County stay-at-home order. And that got people going, and I repeatedly reached out to Raleigh PD thinking they would back down off of this. They absolutely did not, although some of this is academic. Raleigh police have arrested zero people for protesting. They've only arrested, at least a couple of days ago as of then, had only arrested one person for violating a stay-at-home order, and that was someone who threw a big party, they say. So it sounds like more they're taking this hard line in theory, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, I mean, part of the theory is, what does the order say? And when we ask the governor, what did the governor say?
The governor... It wasn't a nailed down answer, but it was pretty nailed down. He basically said, look, the First Amendment is the First Amendment, and my executive order does not supersede that. And that he was trying to take the line that my order is about mass gatherings. It does not address the act of protesting.
But is a protest then, would that be exempted in the order? He, again, wasn't clear about that. And then, of course, there's another question, which is, all right, mass gatherings are possible, but social distancing, masks, and the rest of this order are still in play. So were you abiding by the rest of that, even though you may have gathered in numbers greater than 10? That's all kind of complicating this whole question, right?
Sure, sure. And again, my primary interest, at least for me, was in the way Raleigh PD was describing things after the fact, basically right. How they laid out what their authority was, as opposed to someone being arrested for violating the social distance. Yeah. We can certainly have a conversation about that, but in my mind, they're not separate issues, but they are two issues.
Let's talk more about the priorities of this reopen movement. Can you gather what's behind it?
Not really. They won't let me into their Facebook group, and I'm real hurt by that. It does, again, it's so hard to see how big something is. I've seen some polling data where people primarily, like two-thirds of people, even in rural areas, are kind of taking a wait-and-see approach on wanting to reopen. But there is this significant movement online. They had this one rally. I've heard there may be another rally next week. I have not been able to confirm that yet. And I know that some lawmakers are getting some pressure to push back against the governor on his stay-at-home orders and, of course, on the local stay-at-home orders as well. I've seen a number of lawmakers, Republican lawmakers in North Carolina, put out polls that are really kind of a way to get your email address and your contact information for the future, for long term. But they ask, you know, when should we open up? And they offer a handful of dates.
All right. And the polling, can you tell sort of what nationally what we're looking at in terms of overall? Do people want to hold off? Do people want to get right back? And then I guess there are some splits along party lines, along rural-urban splits, that sort of thing, right?
I have not seen a ton of polling. I saw Frank Luns, I believe is his name. He does a lot of polling for Fox News. He posted something to Twitter the other day, and it was overwhelmingly in favor of taking a wait-and-see approach on reopening. But again, that's one poll. I can't go deep on that one.
All right, so getting back to this tweet and the question about reopening and protest, it's interesting because there's now a question about whether or not constitutional rights, in other words, is the right to protest somehow curtailed in the stay-at-home order? And then would that be a constitutional violation? But it's not the first time that constitutional rights have been invoked. In response to this, there was an anti-abortion protest in Charlotte, then an arrest made in Swain County for violating a curfew. So do you think we'll see a more concrete definition of the apparent conflict between the First Amendment here and these stay-at-home orders?
Well, these things always get hashed out after the fact, right? But they only get hashed out to the extent people are willing to take them through what can be a lengthy court process. You mentioned the two cases, the curfew in Swain County and the abortion protest. I believe both of those have triggered lawsuits. We'll see how far people are willing to go with that. And we'll also see how police, you know, the governor has said repeatedly, like, look, I trust police to enforce this reasonably. You know, there's a lot of decision points, but the most important one, right, is that officer and that person and how they're interacting and how far either side is willing to push it at the moment, potentially, of arrest. I've also spoken to Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman. She says, look, they call me before they make an arrest. We have a conversation about it, and arrest is always going to be a last resort. So I think it's all kind of a wait and see, and then, as usually happens, the courts will sort it out to some extent afterward.
Well, you know, it's not the only constitutional question now that's come into focus in all of this, because right now state and local governments have faced most of the backlash on enforcement. But federal public health policies are going to soon be at odds with personal freedoms. I mean, tell us about proposals to introduce contact tracing into the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about what people keep saying we need to reopen, they say, well, we need lots of testing. Okay, that's one thing. But we also need this kind of army of public health workers, a lot of people say, to do contact tracing to find out, okay, you have coronavirus. Who all have you been close enough to where they might have it too? And then the question becomes, you know, what do we require of these people when it comes to quarantine and isolation? In some Asian countries that have dealt in the past with outbreaks in different manners, they use cell phones. And some of these apps can be compulsory. Some of them might be voluntary. You know, would people be willing to get an app on their phone that uses Bluetooth or other data to determine how close you are to other people's phones? And then if one of those people reports that they've tested positive for COVID-19, then you get contacted. And I think we're coming into these questions where government officials are going to have to decide how to frame this, but the question may very well be, all right, how much privacy are you willing to let go of in order to reopen the economy with a little bit less danger, particularly for people who are at risk of having serious, serious complications from COVID-19.
Right. And as you suggest, it may not be just my right that I would sign away for this moment, right? Because once I do that, then everybody I come in contact with is perhaps implicated. Otherwise, the whole vision of the thing, the whole point of the thing collapses.
We are going to learn a lot through this process, I think, about what our cell phones really tell the people who run those systems, which primarily is going to be Apple and Google. I think, you know, we've seen some things in the past where we're learning, you know, that the veil gets lifted. But I think we're going to, more people are going to notice this as we go forward.
And we haven't talked about this, but the fact is there are some health implications to this shutdown, too. It's not a one-sided deal where we're just protecting health. There are health implications for unemployment. There are health implications for people behind doors, domestic violence, and all sorts of other indicators that may be trending downward because of the shutdown. And we didn't even talk about that. We talked about the economic reasons. So all of that is in play as we move forward in the days and weeks ahead.
Yeah, I mean, people are stressed. That has impacts. People, there is some evidence that they're not going in for what may be stroke symptoms. You know, they're so afraid of going to a hospital or to a doctor that they're more willing to ignore what may be real, real problems. I have a neighbor who is a nurse, and he says in a couple of weeks, he just fully expects people to be showing up en masse further along in a real serious health problem than they would have been otherwise. Because they want to stay away from the virus, and so they want to stay away from doctors.
Travis, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Travis Fain, WRAL State House reporter.